Hi there. Welcome to On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G, and this is a podcast about work. Each episode, I talk with someone about how they do work, how they feel about it, and how it relates to the rest of their life. Today, I'm talking with Wendy Donner. Wendy is a coach, an educator, and more importantly, a dear, dear friend. Wendy has supported me on my workplace journey, and I'm excited to have her here as my first ever podcast guest. Wendy, welcome to On Work.
Thank you so much, Joel. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay, thank you. This is really fun for me, and I hope we have an engaging and interesting conversation like we always do.
Except, I'm sure we will.
Okay. So here's the first question I have, and it relates to like when you were a child, what did you think work would be like? And when I think about it, like for me, I have some specific memories and I have some feelings. I think at one point I wanted to design cars, or I thought that like I would never want to work in an office or in a cubicle. Like I just have this weird childish sense of it. And I'm wondering, like, when you were a child growing up, what you thought work would be like.
Yeah, that's a great question. Like my dad's work was such a like dominant part of our family story. He was a doctor and he was like he worked a lot, he worked hard, and he took up a lot of space in our family. So I always assumed I would be a doctor. It was like, that's what you do when you grow up and go to work. And my mom worked too, but she worked in my dad's office as a nutritionist. So their work was combined. And yeah, I just figured that was the path I would follow and I would be a doctor.
Yeah, and did they think you would be a doctor? Did they have any expectations of you, or did they present you, or share with you, or think about, or tell you?
You know, my dad, this I laugh about this sometimes because there's this thing he used to do publicly, like when we were with other people. And he would introduce me to other people and he'd say, "This is my daughter, Wendy. She's going to be the first female president of the American Stock or the New York Stock Exchange." Which is
Yeah. Did he
the
think it was funny?
opposite.
Did he think it was
No,
funny? No.
he thought it was kind of funny, but he saw me as this, like, I think he thought I would do the things he wished he had done, like of all of his kids. I was the one who he thought would go. He was sort of captivated by business, even though he was a doctor. And I think it was one of those projections where he was like, she's going to go do the things. She's like this badass business person, which he read wrong. And, but it was always so funny because I was always like, no, it did not resonate at all. It did not feel like I felt kind of, complimented by it because it sounded like something big and kind of sexy and wild, but in my heart I was like, I'm not gonna do that. Yeah, so that I remember that. And then other than that, I think he loved being a doctor, and I think he was like, it's a great path and you would love it, and supported it
So you did think that you would be a doctor.
up until college when I went to college and I was pre-med, and then
Okay.
I
You went far
started
into the
taking
idea.
And started taking classes and did not do very well in those classes.
Were you not motivated, or it was difficult, or
It was difficult.
it was
It was
difficult?
School had been relatively easy up until then, and I went to a really competitive college, and I think I just got into these huge freshman classes of like, intro to bio and intro to, a math class, like an advanced math class, and I was really humbled. And I was like, I'm not getting good grades. I'm not doing very well. And so the system kind of pushed me towards other directions.
Okay. One thing I'm interested in is like the support we received growing up, and like what maybe contributed or didn't contribute to us achieving like career success, I guess is a topic I'm interested in. And so like as you like found out that that wasn't going to work for you, did you have support, you think, in like helping find a new direction?
I don't recall that I did. I felt pretty much on my own at that point, and I just found my way to classes that, in a way, it was probably the first time where I really got to think, what do I want and who am I? Because I had been in this path following my dad. but I don't remember talking to them about it. I don't remember talking to anybody about it really. I just remember letting my kind of heart lead the way.
And what were those classes that you liked, or that led you, that maybe led you on the path to maybe where you are now, or some of the classes, some of what led you to some maybe some previous work that you've had?
Yeah, that's a good question. I ended up being a public policy major, which does actually relate to my career in a lot of ways because I wanted to impact the world and make it a better place. And I think that's probably the common thread of all the things that I've done. And I really also like to communicate and sort of really be in the realm of human systems. And that, so I ended up in public policy, and I loved the intellectual challenge of it. And also the, a lot of what I learned was how to understand systems and then get a sense of how change could impact the world in a better way, and then also how to communicate that. So really learned how to write and communicate clearly. And those have all sort of brought me to different phases of my career, I would say.
It's funny that you mentioned, I had no idea that you were a public policy major, but it's funny because like that is like one of the things that interests me currently is like it seems like a way to do work for good, right? Like helping decide how large societies or groups, whatever, make change and move forward, or how they express themselves or whatever. And that I think that's a very engaging and interesting idea for me. So
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I didn't even know what it was, I think, until I got
yeah.
to college, and then I was like, oh, well, that seems to make sense.
Yeah. It's one of the things, like one of the dreams I have is like making an impact, you know, in the country, you know, like living in the United States. And like there's a lot of me raging against, like, obviously my inputs, my speeds and stuff, and like I look at them and they just upset me. And it seems like public policy is a place where potentially you can make a difference or help change things.
It's true, but it's interesting though. When I graduated, I was like, this is too far away. I think I need to be closer to the people that I
Yeah,
impact.
yes, yes. Yeah, I have. We also, I've been following an ultra runner, David Roach, and he was a lawyer and he was doing like, you know, impactful work. And now he's like a running coach, you know, and he has talked about, I've heard him on his podcast talk about it and like how it just makes a lot more sense to like make a, you know, never think globally, act locally sort of sense of things. Like interacting with
Yeah.
people and seeing change from on individuals or helping people is seemingly more fulfilling, or I don't know, better in some way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it sort of de it when I think back, like I'm at an age now where I'm like, oh wow, there are choices that I made that led me down a direction, and like there are more doors seem to be closed than open right now. Not necessarily in a bad way, but it's just like time. Like, I'm not going to go back and get a degree right now. I'm not going to go back and like start something really new. And I was young at that age, but I just intuitively knew because I went and worked in DC and I did that sort of big policy work. And I was like, I need to just touch the people. Literally, I need to be in the same room with the people that I'm trying to impact. That decision
Yeah.
set me down a path that like was really sort of defined, I think, the choice set at every different stage in my career. Had I stayed in that kind of big public policy arena, I would have been doing more big impact systems work. I probably would say it makes sense. Like I'm such a connector, and I need to like that. It makes sense to me that I would feel the need to get fed from a more intimate relationship. So what I knew back then was probably the right path, but also interesting to kind of gaze at it from this age and be like, well, that was a big choice.
Yeah. I love that. I love the idea of impacting and working with people individually or in small groups. When you were working in DC, like what was your relationship with work and like, you know, maybe personal life? You were a young person, like was work something of a burden? Did you always love it? Did you like what was your early relationship with work?
Well, I would compare my first, well, my DC job was at an internship in between my junior and senior years in college. And I worked at the American Bar Association and in a department called the Center on Children and the Law. So at that point, I already knew I was interested in young people and making young people's lives better. But I was deathly bored by that job. I was like, this is, I remember like learning how to make coffee for the first time. And I just like made a lot of coffee and drank a lot of coffee. And I was like, felt like I was playing grown up in an office, but felt I worked the whole summer on actually a Joe Biden initiative, back when he was a senator. And I made like this much dent into something that was so big, and I felt not that inspired by it. And then when it came time to get a job a year later, I ended up being a teacher. And I think I felt like I should continue to go do what I was on the path to do, like maybe go to law school or work in DC or work for some big system. But I remember saying to my parents, I'm just going to go teach for a couple years because I just want to do that for fun. And then I'll go do my real career. And I ended up, that ended up being a 20-year stint working in K-12 education. But it was because, again, like my heart was telling me, this is going to make you happy. But the other messages were sort of saying, but it's not good enough,
A teacher job sounds to me like a personality job, like I am a teacher. Like when I talk to people, like I never say I'm an instructional designer. I have to joke about it, or I have to put it off the side, or I have to say I don't like to talk about it. But when you were a teacher, was it something that you connected to as like part of who you were or who you are now?
Definitely.
Definitely.
Yes,
Yes.
definitely.
Yes.
It's an identity job.
An
Yeah, well
identity
said.
job. Yes. I think that I don't know if I glorify identity jobs or if I've just only had one briefly here or there.
What do you think makes an identity job and an identity? What do you
Well,
think
I think it's
distinguishes
something that
it?
you're proud or you're something that like you connect with the ideals of it, maybe, the goal of the job you connect with, you want to achieve the mission and vision of that particular goal, like viscerally. And then when you like meet somebody or yeah, when you meet somebody, you're like, and the conversation comes up, you like, it's about who you are. It's not like a separate thing,
Yeah, I think that's really resonates. It's like that my first teaching job, I got paid, I remember I got paid less than $14,000 to teach, and I didn't care at all. Like there was no I needed to it was a boarding school, so they fed me and they gave me a house, so my expenses were really small, but I was 100% of why I was doing it was because I wanted to do it. It made me feel good. It was inspiring. It felt like it gave me purpose. 100%. And it didn't really matter what I, clearly, it didn't matter what I made because that's not very much money.
Yeah, that which is like as I like think about my work now and I look around for other work, like it's very hard for me to get away from the benefits and the salary and the PTO, and I'm just so wrapped up in that that it like stagnates me into, like not being able to potentially, and maybe with age, but
I know.
yeah.
It's such an interesting part. I'm sure this is what is going to really unfold through this podcast that you're doing, but how much of what we do for work gets to be about what lights us up and how much of it ends up being about like survival and money, all that stuff, and how that balance can really tip into a place where it's like not good.
Yeah. Yes. That's right. That's right. Because there is a certain sense when like the safety and security and stuff is good, but it could be that like at some point the safety and security isn't worth it, maybe, or that amount of safety and security needs to be like risked to a certain extent. When you talk about being a teacher, I certainly have a memory of my first summer working in Alaska in tourism and like not making a lot of money, but food was paying for, living in a tent or whatever it was, like but like I have a really strong memory of coming back to my tent cabin, canvas tent cabin, and like flopping back in my little hammock I put up in the tree, and just I have a visceral memory of like everything is perfect, Just like, and I definitely talked to friends back home in the Bay Area that summer, and like, why are you doing that? In my head, like, why are you going to that office job? Like, I found this, like, why are you still doing that? But, like, it was like a, it turns out that was just like a short-term thing. And that job, in the end, isn't something that I wanted long-term, like it didn't work out for me in the long term, because of whatever. But, I do have just that one little
You can
moment of
feel
that
it,
summer. I can
right?
feel it. I can feel it. Yeah. And that person wasn't that young. That person was 31 or something like that, so,
Right. It's not necessarily just a 22-year-old thing. And it's like, how can we, what is there to learn from that? There's something there
It's
to
interesting
remind
also
us.
talking to you, particularly Wendy, about this, is because like part of your work, from what I understand, is talking to people like me about having the issues they have with work, right? Like, so I'm interested in your relationship with work, but you also have this sort of like meta or larger sense of like, working with people on how they, on their relationships with work.
Yeah, it's true. And what is the relationship with all of these big questions? What am I here for? What is going to make me happy? For some people, that fear of insecurity, financial insecurity is so strong that it really does, it's like the singular driver for a lot of choice making. I think in my role, I often, without an agenda of my own, sense that if I can expand that even a little bit for people, like, what if it were a little bit different than that? What if it were even a little bit more about what makes you happy, what you're really here to do, how you might make the world a better place, how what like lights you up inside. Then it usually ends up with like a better alignment for folks. But there's a lot of stresses in our world. Like we generally sort of hear every day, all day, that we're supposed to have more and buy more, and it's a lot to work against.
I don't know if you saw the I don't know if it was about work with Obama, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. I think they produce shows now and they have a show about work. I think it was on Netflix. And
Oh, cool.
one of his takeaways is that like his parents just went to work, or the older generation, they just went to work and they didn't expect to have like an impact or enlightenment, or they just, you went to the thing, you did the thing, and you had a whiskey at night or whatever, or a cigarette, hung out with your family, watched the Honeymooners and went to bed or whatever it was, And I guess I romanticized that a little bit too. And I'm wondering, like, and it also ties into the sense, I've talked to you about this before, but my sense of having to be a janitor or a garbage person, and like all those ideas all combined with my sense for fulfillment, And I'm wondering like how you address that, or how you think we should look at that with like those competing thoughts.
Yeah, like is work sometimes like you got to go to work. Work is sometimes hard, and
Yeah,
sometimes you
like
just go to
what?
work and
Yeah, like it's
don't
like
overthink it.
people for generations or whatever, that there was a whole generation of people who just went to work, did the work, didn't expect anything, came home, and then there's a whole people right now who like go to work and are janitors or whatever it is that they do that isn't like necessarily making an impact in the world. And then there's me who thinks that like I'm all disgruntled and unhappy because like I have all this comfy benefits and stuff, but I don't have job satisfaction. Like I don't know if you feel those things or personally or professionally, but if you have any insight on that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways you're sort of speaking to variations in privilege, and it is in some ways like a privilege and maybe a burden to have choice and to have that expectation that work should be more than just doing something, getting paid for it so you can sort of survive. And I think that some people don't have that privilege because they don't have the access or the education. I think, I believe that there's still some sort of way to feel purposeful and connected and aligned even if you're a janitor, like even if you're doing that, maybe that's a fit for you. But I certainly think that for me, work has been, it's really been about finding, there have been moments in my work, I would say most of them, where I feel like I'm in true alignment with what it is that I'm like here to do. And when I get out of that alignment, I can feel it. And it doesn't really, it I'm not as happy. And so, doing the work I do as a coach, one of the benefits of being a coach, I work with individuals, I work with mostly couples and organizations now. So, but it's the same concept that I'm sort of helping people find a better way or deeper alignment with who they are, more happiness, more thriving. And like, I kind of have to have that in my life in order to show up and even just like energetically invite people to explore that. Like, it wouldn't, I think people would know, if I weren't there. Part of it is this like exchange. So since doing this work full time, the coaching work over the last 5 years, it's been like this job benefit that I kind of have to keep staying pretty much true to myself, or else I don't think I do as good a job.
Right, of course, of course. I really like the idea of alignment. Of being in like a track or a groove sort of sense, where like when you're like not in it, it's not as good. And of course you would have to do it in your line of work for, if you're helping people, people want you to be expressing and be living a certain what they would like or
Yeah, it's like a, it's not even, it's not like I show up on a call and I'm like, so I'm in deep alignment with my choice. Like, it's more just like, it's really important for me to just show up in that way. And I think that's communicated in all of these sort of nonverbal messaging that we do with each other when we're sort of checking in and like attuning to each other. And I think when I'm, if I'm off, that means I'm more stressed, less present, not as able to attune, then I think that that's probably felt by other folks. Yeah.
Well, Wendy, speaking of alignment, I'm going to take a quick break here. And so I want to thank you, Wendy, for being here. And we're going to take a quick break and be right back after this message from our sponsor.
Sounds great.
Ever find yourself staring blankly at your screen, willing your fingers to clickety-clack out a few more pointless ones and zeros? Wishing you could ghost your job and live out your productive years following your dreams and not theirs? That could be existential dread, creeping in at just the right moment to remind you that meaning is for other people. Existential dread. It's not a choice, it's life. Ask your doctor or a ChatGPT if existential dread is right for you. Side effects reported by 100% of users include depression, dissatisfaction, loss of vigor, reduced happiness, sleepless nights, acne, burnout, back pain, nausea, internal bleeding, panic attacks, and general malaise. We're back. If you've totally spaced out and forgotten what you're listening to, this is On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G. And my guest today is Wendy Donner, coach, educator, and all-around amazing human being. Thank you again for being here, Wendy. So, what's been coming up for you as you reflect on this conversation so far?
Well, I think it's such a great thing to consider, and I do sometimes, I think your question around like how much do we get to have exactly what we want in work is a one I do think about, and it's an important one. And sometimes you just need to work because
That's right. That's right.
like you have to go to the field and get the crop. You have to build the house. You have to
Well,
do the
I have
things.
this idea that there's like a disconnect between doing the work and the benefits of it. Like when I sit at my desk, like I don't think about like the food I'm creating or the clothes I'm buying or the vacations I'm going on. Like that doesn't, and I feel like if I was a farmer, I'd be like, oh, this is the food I'm growing so that my family can eat. And I'd be like maybe motivated to get up in the morning and go out and do it. But there's like a disconnect there.
Yes, that's so true. It's so true. It's like, why are we doing
Yeah.
this?
And it's not clear to me in my gut, like why I'm sitting at the desk, like, making a PowerPoint presentation, like.
So other than the Alaska experience,
Tourism.
when have you felt like the most alignment in your work?
I think it relates to helping people, frankly, which goes back to what you were talking about. Like, I have grand ideas, but really, like, the most individual enjoyment I get is like, I did AV support in my current company, like, where I'd help people with the AV in the rooms, and like, someone calls, they have a problem, I go in, I fix it or help them with it or don't help them with it or whatever it is. I have an interaction with them, and then generally I would fix it. And then they would be able to carry on with their day and do like the presentation that they were doing. And that was a good feeling, So like, I think helping people individually and is when I felt most interested and engaged.
Joel, you know what we haven't talked about? We worked together.
We did work together, yes. I recall you were my boss for like a summer. You were nice enough to hire me to work for you. Yeah, for sure.
I loved working with you.
People generally do. Like I'm pretty sure that's the general experience, is that people do like working with me.
Why do you think they like working with you?
Because I'm generally doing the job that's being asked of. I think some of it is being like a tall white man also is helpful. I'm pretty sure, but I think I do what's expected. I can show up on time. I can leave on time. I can like go do the things, and like I just seem to get the work done.
Well, my recollection of that summer is that I was just like launching a summer program, and after a week or two of it, pretty early on, my co-founder and I felt completely overwhelmed by the layer of like the number of things that we had to do, and then we brought you in. And my recollection is from the time you got in, everything changed. Like having somebody who was so easy to work with and such a sort of cooperative, capable person to support a sort of a complicated emerging system it was like life-changing for that program.
Thank you, Wendy. That is really nice to hear. I think I have. I feel like I've lost some of that ability or glow or something has like been diminished in the current situation that I'm in. I'm in a situation.
Yeah.
But it
Well,
kind of
maybe
like,
this podcast will help you figure out what it is.
Well, we're kind of winding down a little bit here, but one thing that interests me also is like how you're motivated to do your work or to show up every day, or maybe like how you wake up in the morning feeling, and like what do you think about intrinsic motivation and extrinsic motivation in your life in doing the work that you do?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, because I'm in a bit of a transition period with my work right now, where I've started to work with more corporate corporations, and there's like a sort of increased intensity and complexity, and also, I've been paid more, so my relationship to work, sort of back to that alignment thing. In some ways that I'm sensing like it's a pulling me a little bit away from my track. So just in the last couple of weeks, I've been really thinking about what is it that I really am here to do? What is it I'm really here to do? Like what feels like it just kind of naturally flows from me. And then when I'm doing that, the motivation is pretty damn easy to find.
I see. I see. Yeah, I like that. I like it. The motivation comes with the alignment.
The motivation comes with the alignment. Yes, I would say that's true. And I also, for me, part of what makes me love work is staying like learning, continuing to. One thing I really realized about myself is that I get bored pretty easily and I need to do new things pretty often. And if you look at my career, I kind of change things dramatically every like 2 to 5 years. When I was a teacher, I'd move schools. When I was, then I moved into academic research for a whole chunk of time. And now I'm coaching. And even with coaching, I find myself organizing my work life so that I have new things happening all the time. So I think that is uniquely me. Not everybody is like that. Many people sort of like to get their job and get really good at it and refine it and do it every day. That kind of makes me feel claustrophobic. So I'm now sort of in a moment of really making sure I know that about myself. And so I make sure that I don't get stuck in something that's going to feel really old for me in a couple of years. Like I have the flexibility to keep moving and learning and growing.
One thing I hear you saying is know yourself or be aware of what makes you happy or what works for you and listen to that.
Yes.
That's something that perhaps you've done. Like when you were, going back to the beginning of the interview or the conversation is like when you were trying for medical school and it didn't work out and you listened to yourself and you tried teaching and it has led you to
Yeah.
like keep listening to yourself and what works for you. And I think that is a good takeaway for me.
I think that's the key. Really listen to yourself and when you're on the right path and you know when you're not. And so and some of these things you just need time to understand about yourself, right?
How much time?
Maybe a whole lifetime, apparently.
All right, Wendy. Well, here's my final question. Is there something new in your life, a habit, an idea, or an insight that's making things better for you?
Yeah, it's not new necessarily. Is that okay?
For
It's
sure.
important though, and it's so core. But I've sort of realized it again recently, so it feels present. When I find myself, or I would say when I notice this in anybody else I'm in relationship with, gripping really tightly to something, it's generally a time to let go. And like unless you're like holding on to like a cliff and you're like then don't let go, but generally speaking, like you're not holding on to a cliff. You think you are. You think you're holding on to a cliff. That's why you're gripping so tightly. But to sort of like pause and be like, I'm not holding on to a cliff here. I can actually let go of whatever it is I'm holding on tightly to, and I'm going to be okay. And actually, I'm going to be better.
There's a podcast I listened to recently with Sister Helen Prejean. It's an old podcast. You know who she is? She is a death row nun. She has set the movie. There was a movie with Susan Sarandon, where
Oh,
she
wow.
Susan Sarandon was played. Anyhow, she had in the
Yeah.
pod, one thing she says is like, stop clinging to the shore of the river. Like, just let yourself be taken away. Like, life is in the flow of the river and stop
I
clinging
love
to the
it.
edge. And I think that relates to what you're talking about when you're clinging and you're holding on. Like, it's a letting
Let
go that
go.
needs to happen. So,
So yeah, this is not a new concept. It might be the oldest sort of piece of wisdom around, but somehow we forget it often. I forget it often, and I'll find myself in a grip and I'm like, "Oh wait, I can let go." And then I let go and I'm like, "I feel way better every time." Every time. And new opportunity usually comes in at that point. When in the context of work, when I'm gripping tightly to something, it's usually clogging up the channel. And when I let go of it, even though it's scary, because I'm like, but I don't know, will more money come or will I have, will it be enough scarcity stuff? Then usually there's like an inflow of opportunity that happens.
I love that. I love that. Thank you, Wendy.
Yeah.
Yay. Well, that's it for today's conversation. Thank you again, Wendy, for being here. And thank you so much for listening. This has been On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G. Music credit, Life is Good by Beat Mechanic from the Free Music Archive, used under Creative Commons license. Additional emotional support from subscribers like you, Jill Gordon, D. Michael Lewis, and listener number 3. That's all for this episode. Be present, keep going, look up, and take care.